AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Wheat futures were lower on the day, but sharp gains in the soy complex helped corn futures erase early losses. Live cattle and feeder cattle seem to be content to hold close to unchanged ahead of Friday's cattle on feed report, while lean hog futures posted a third consecutive lower close.
Live from the tippy top of Hump Day via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, it's a talk with Ben Brown from MIZZOU. Directly following the news, Todd Bubba Horwitz from BubbaTrading.com. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, welcome the host of AgriTalk, Jeff Laurie.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you so much. Look at you adopting the new home state lingo.
That's right.
Look at you go.
I was playing a few months ago, in a club in North Kansas City. They had the TV on. It was, I believe, Mizzou playing Ohio State in some sort of game of note.
Okay.
And I do recall playing the Copacabana when Mizzou sealed the game.
Okay.
No one even thanked me.
Really?
It was the Manilow that pushed him over the edge. I'm convinced of that. Freaking Tigers. I love Barry Manilow. Who knew?
Who knew? Who knew? Well, those that did responded. Responded.
Yes.
I love
Absolutely
it.
Absolutely they did. For sure.
Love it. All right, man. Welcome to AgriTalk. Glad you're with us on this Wednesday afternoon. Week is moving right along. And, boy, the Fed decided to leave interest rates unchanged. No surprise there.
Sure.
But some of the comments that are coming from Fed Chairman Powell in his press briefing remind me of some comments that we've had from Dr. Vince Malanga at LaSalle Economics over the years. That being, sometimes I wish they just keep their mouth shut.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Telegraphing is one thing, but just removing the opportunity for all surprise is another thing. He's even talking about, you know, don't forget, we don't have to have a meeting in order to make adjustments to monetary policy.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what he's saying right there is, listen, if the economic data suggests we should move between the FOMC meetings, we will. We will do that. That's one of the last things that I thought that they had left that they could surprise the market with, Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And now you can't even do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't find that surprising at all.
Right. Well, we'll talk with Bud. We'll talk with Bubba about that. We'll get some perspective on it from Ben Brown at the University of Missouri.
Yeah, man.
And, yeah, let's get to the news. What do you
got? Let's do some news. May soft red winter wheat futures opened slightly lower and near session highs and drifted to the downside throughout the day. Front month SRW spiked support at 540 before recovering to close mid-range. So far, Chip, this week's high is below last week's low. And May SRW futures and the low is just above last week's low. Traders are looking for more of this consolidative pattern ahead of USDA reports at the end of the month. Traders today did note headlines out of Russia suggesting the country will do what it can to make its wheat competitive in export channels, and that limited buying interest. July HRW wheat futures were 1¾ cents lower today, 573¾. July SRW wheat down 7 cents to 560¼. July spring wheat closed at 661, down a penny and a half, Chip.
Yeah, it's not very often that you can change one word and make a sentence more descriptive of the situation, but I'm going to try here.
Okay.
Today's trade did, traders today did note headlines out of Russia that suggest the country will do what it must to make its wheat competitive. You know that whatever the situation is, Russian wheat is going to be the most affordable in the world as we go forward.
Ethanol production in the week ended March 15 averaged 1.046 million barrels per day, up 22,000 barrels from the previous week and 49,000 barrels ahead of the same week last year. Ethanol stocks rose a modest 227,000 barrels in the week to just over 26 million. Buying interest in corn was limited by spillover pressure from wheat. Also, Chip, reports indicate China's imports of Brazilian corn in the first 2 months of this year totaled 4.1 million metric tons. Oof, that's up 178% from a year ago. Imports of U.S. corn totaled just under 767,000 metric tons. That one's down 67% from a year ago. May corn futures a half penny lower, 439. July corn unchanged at 452 and a quarter. December corn futures closed at 474 and three quarters, up 1.5 cents, Chip.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, I tell you what, lost market share to Brazil has been a hot topic of discussion in the markets this week. Yep.
USDA this morning announced the sale of 120,000 metric tons of U.S. soybeans for delivery to unknown destinations in the current marketing year. That demand, along with gains in soybean meal and bean oil futures, helped bean prices rally sharply. It also helped beans shrug off reports that China's imports of Brazilian beans in the first 2 months of this year totaled nearly 7 million metric tons, up 211% from a year ago, while imports of U.S. beans at 5 million tons were down 49% from a year ago. May bean futures opened near session lows and closed near session highs, and at the highest level since February 1st, May beans were 24 cents higher, 1209 and a half. July beans up 23, 1223 and a quarter. November beans closed at 12 bucks and one quarter cent, up 19 cents on the day.
July soybean meal today up $8.10 a ton. July bean oil up 84 points. It was a good day in the soy complex.
I got a hustle here. July cotton 100 points lower, 92.12. On your livestocks, April fat cattle were 25 cents lower today, 187.80. April feeder futures 15 cents lower, 254.92 and a half. And April lean hog futures 52 and one half cents lower, 85.30. Chip.
Thank you, Davis. Todd Horwitz, BubbaTrading.com. How you doing, Bubba?
What's up, fellas? How you doing?
Well, the Dow is up more than 340 points. They must have
The world is safe. We have no issues. The economy is great. Let's go out and spend some more money and get deeper in debt because the Fed's going to cut rates, they said, three times this year now. Now, I guess there's no inflation. I guess they're going to change the target from 2% to 4% now because inflation is as high as it can be. And how these imbeciles can actually say that they're going to cut rates three times this year is almost laughable, especially if you're at the age of 35 or older. You know that rates should never be at this rate, and they should be higher anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. Bubba, when I heard the comments from Chairman Powell about ideas of cutting rates, but we're still committed to getting that inflation rate down to 2%, I'm thinking to myself, the only way you're getting down to 2% is if you have two or three interest rate increases, not cuts this year.
Hey, look, this is a political statement. That's what it really comes down to, because if you look at the metrics, forget about anything else, look at the bond market, look at the inversion of the yield curve, look at all the interest rate markets out there, and they're telling you that they cannot cut rates. So if they do cut rates legitimately, it's purely political, which is why they said that it would be later in the year. So if President Biden needs some help, you'll see some rate cuts towards the end of the year here, towards the election, because logically and realistically, you cannot cut rates into the economy we have now, especially with people spending like crazy and building more and more debt because the money is still relatively inexpensive.
Yep, yep. You know, we're a long ways from September. But if they cut rates in September, Bubba, everything that you just said is 100% correct. All right, man. We'll talk to you later.
All right, babe. Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Todd Horwitz, BubbaTrading.com. Ben Brown is next.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
The chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad you're with us. The commentary, Davis, surrounding, Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke is sometimes when you hear the commentary, your immediate reaction, I'll admit, sometimes I just need to pull back and not react immediately to it and give myself a little bit of time to maybe decipher what exactly he is saying. But then when you get Bubba on, who basically says, listen, they should not be thinking about interest rate cuts. Mm-hmm. If anything, if they're going to get inflation under control, there may have to be an interest rate increase between now and the end of the year. Yeah. That would shock the market. There's a surprise move, something that might actually get the market reaction that they are looking for. I don't know. But it's so when you get that response from Bubba that kind of supports what you were thinking, it's a little easier to get out there on a limb and say some things. That's for sure.
Interesting. The stock market was so enthusiastic. I wonder if the report had something to do with that, too.
Oh, yeah. You bet. Let's get Ben Brown's take on that. Ben's an ag economist there at the University of Missouri. Ben, how are you, my friend? It's good to talk with you again.
Yeah, it's great to talk with you, too, Chip. I got the pleasure of talking with Davis last time I was on this program.
Right?
And so it's nice to have you both. Yeah, we had a great time. I think I even got like the elusive third spot like the third block of time as well. So
you were very generous with your time. Appreciate you.
We had a good time, didn't we? But Chip, it's nice to have you back too. Yeah,
well,
nice to have you back.
I was just gonna say, if you guys feel like I'm in the way, I can always be, take over Davis's job for this one. That would be all right.
Well, it's nice to have you both. I'll take you both. How about
good?
Answer?
Yeah. Excellent.
So I'm doing well. So, thanks for asking.
You bet, Ben. You bet. I'm glad to hear that. So the interest rates and some of the comments that we're getting from Chairman Powell. What's your overall take?
Yeah, good question. So I would generally agree that I think the language about how strong of a confirmation for interest rate hikes cuts and three of them still this year surprised me, because the Federal Reserve has largely used these press conferences as a way to control markets in a way, right? Like it's been a tactic that Jerome Powell has used. He's used it very effectively, especially with those longer term market based rates. They've used the press conferences to kind of manage expectations, and then to almost go against that today and say that, they still anticipated, three interest rate cuts. That's why we've seen the stock market rally as much as what we have. I'll dig down in the notes in some of their reports.
Yep.
So every quarter we get, their updated dot plot diagram and their updated forecast of all the different macroeconomic assumptions for the next couple of years. And so the last one we had was in December. We got another update today after their during their press conference today. And to me, what was interesting was looking through those and comparing those to the previous, you know, the December report.
Okay.
We basically we've reduced the downside distribution. So if you look at those, if you look at their indicators, all their indicators move the opposite direction that they want them to go, right? Like they basically were saying inflation's going to be a little bit hotter than what we anticipated in December. Unemployment's going to be a little lower than what we anticipated in December, you know, than what we anticipated. And yeah. And those are not, that's not the direction you want these to go if you're right. If you're trying to encourage inflation to continue to reduce, or, you know, to the growth of inflation to continue to slow. And so you look at those, and then you look at the individual Fed members and their responses. And basically what happened is those that were on the low end in December are now a little bit higher. And the ones that were on the high end are still at, you know, they're still where they were, right? They haven't changed their position. And so I'm sitting here and I'm saying, the fact that they doubled down on this message in the press conference, and yeah. that's the channel in which they've been using to communicate and manage markets in the future, I'm just surprised of how clear cut that language was.
Yeah.
And I think the market was surprised, and that's why you saw the reaction today. I still maintain, I just don't know if we can go, you know, this long and not think about increasing rates at least one or two more times, right?
Like, yeah.
That has been my position for months now, and I maintain that position today. And the Fed kind of went the opposite way. So yep. Very interesting. Very, very interesting.
Man, that's good stuff, Ben. Wow. Really good. And I think anybody that deals with borrowed money and has interest rate as a cost on their balance sheets needs to be paying attention to this, because – If the Fed decides, listen, no interest rate increase is better than if they would just decide to hold interest rates steady and hold them higher for longer, that's still going to have an impact on the cash interest rates, the real interest rates that banks are charging out there, isn't it? I don't think
Correct.
There's any question.
But we didn't even get that.
Right.
Yeah, that's
right.
My point. We didn't even get that today. And so that's just what's fascinating, is they could have taken that route. They could have left interest rates where they were, taken a little stronger stance in this post-press conference, you know, language. And we didn't even get that, right?
Right.
So it's just, yeah, it was very
Good
interesting.
Stuff.
Yeah, very, very interesting. You were talking about borrowing money. I want to...
Yep.
This is something that, you know, just has been on top of mind lately when I'm working with farmers and we're talking about, you know, how to incorporate this low margin, high interest rate environment into our management mindsets and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And I'm gonna give you a personal story here for a second. I just bought a new car. I had to buy a new car. I just bought a new car, and I was prepared to pay it off. I had the money to pay it off. I was very fortunate to do that. But the car dealership said, well, if you finance it, we can knock another $1,000 off that price. And I said something about, well, what's your interest rate? And they were willing to lock in a 3-year fixed interest rate at 1.9%. And I turned around and said, how can you do that? I mean, like, yeah. how are you still offering interest rates at 1.9%? And that's what's amazing to me, is like, we have this strong, like, difference between what some people are offering for interest rates and what other people are offering for interest rates. And so there's an opportunity to shop around, is really what I'm saying, that we haven't seen for a long time, because some people are locked in at different prices. And that's just another point I want to make, is that you can shop around a lot of times and find a better interest rate. So.
Exactly. Which gets to another comment that Bubba made, and that is, consumers continue to spend money and continue to finance. And I don't know, you know, the recession that we were supposed to have, Ben, was so well advertised, yet it hasn't happened. And a big part of the reason that it hasn't happened is because of the consumer's willingness to spend, right?
Yeah, that is true. We have seen consumer, you know, expenditures just at very strong levels. Something you want to talk about, another dichotomy, and I'm not trying to make a political statement here. Please don't. As our listeners, please don't say this is a political statement, but poll after poll and a lot of different parties across the spectrum continues to suggest that average people, you know, assume that the state, or they share that the economy's in poor health, right? Like that the economy's not good. And yet when we get the actual data about consumer confidence, like that's just been screaming off the chart. It reduced a little bit here the last month. right? But we consumer confidence was extremely high in the future of the economy. And that's just not matching what we've seen in polls. That's not, consumer expenditure would certainly suggest that people have faith in the economy. And yet we're also getting these signals of like, well, the economy's not good, right? And so yeah. I go back to this point of we're entering into a period of time, and we've experienced this in the past, to where what people are actually doing and what they think is happening does not match. Mm-hmm. And history would tell us that that creates a very dangerous position, and because you're not managing your risk, right? You're not thinking about the risks that face your operation when your expectations and what you're doing do not align, right? That's my point. It's like it creates this huge, cliff of, you will, if I'll use farm finance, for instance. Let me just bring this back to agriculture. If you assume that the economy is in poor health, but yet you go out and you buy a new tractor or something like that, you're not taking your own financial standings into consideration and maybe taking on more risks than you're capable of handling.
Right.
If in fact the economy does turn, right?
Right.
So it is a challenge. We're entering into that period where things are becoming blurry, and it's paralyzing our management decisions.
I think that's exactly the right way to say it. The vision that we've got going forward is blurry because on one hand, we've got all the data that suggests the economy is performing well and that elusive soft landing is happening. And on the other hand, consumers are reminded every time they go to the grocery store that the grocery bill is 20% higher than it was 3 years ago. The gas tank is 20% more to fill up than it was 3 years ago. There's all those conflicting messages. We'll talk more about it with Ben Brown next.
Let's go to the markets page at profarmer.com and check today's closes, where July HRW wheat futures were 1¾ cents lower at 573¾. July SRW wheat down 7 cents to 560¼. May corn futures were a half penny lower, 439. December corn futures closed at 474¾. That's up 1½ cents today. May soybean futures 24 cents higher, 1209½. November beans closed at $12.25, up 19 cents on the day. July cotton was 100 points lower today, 92.12. And on your livestock, April fat cattle 25 cents lower, 187.80. April feeders 15 cents lower, 254.92½. And April lean hog futures 52½ cents lower to close at 85.30. Get more market news every market day, won't you? Visit tryprofarmer.com.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Glad you're with us. Great conversation with Ben going so far. Ben Brown from the University of Missouri. Dude, I can't tell you how much I enjoyed that conversation in the last segment. That was really good and important. It's important concepts that I think farmers need to be thinking about as they're building their budgets for the year ahead, man. It's really important. So good stuff. Good stuff.
Thank you, Chip. Yeah, you thanks. And we've seen it, you know, like, so I'll talk one final thing about, you know, mm-hmm. this misalignment. We've seen a huge surge in variable rate loans for ag land and operating again. The idea is that the hope that interest rates will come down. Well, what if they don't? Right. Like that's the risk. And what are you doing? Can your operation withstand an interest rate hike from a financial sensitivity analysis or sensitivity basis of higher interest rates? Right. Like that's what I'm talking about is that mismatch there. So.
Yep. Good. Good. Good counsel. All right. Your friends at FAPRI there at the University of Missouri, I think Pat Westhoff was in D.C. yesterday, wasn't he?
That's correct. Yeah, I went out and briefed the House and Senate Ag Committees and USDA and rolled out our baseline for the year. So yesterday was the release of our annual 10-year outlook for crop markets, prices, and government costs and farm income. And so this is what we use to start policy analysis with. This is the foundation, and then everything else from here works off these numbers. So
okay. Let's kind of jump to the bottom line on all of this, and that is farm revenue, net farm revenue. When you look at it from 2 years ago to last year to what it's expected to be this year, this is a storm that the industry is going to have to weather, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's back to this high interest rates, low margin environment.
Yeah.
Not all crops, not all areas of agriculture, seeing the decline in commodity prices. Cattle's the one that stands out, right? Cattle prices continue to move higher due to, you know, lower supplies, herd liquidation, stuff like that. And, you know, in dairy and beef and pork, cheaper feed costs help improve margins as well in those areas. So not everyone is facing this margin squeeze per se, or at least, you know, but certainly on the crop side, we do see that. When we pull everything together, right? So like 2023 is expected to be about $30 billion in aggregate less than 2022. Then when we look ahead to 2024, 2024 numbers, right? Like a decline again in 2024 and then another decline in 2025, and pretty much every subsequent year after that. So it's a deteriorating picture, which, you know, many of our crop producers are already in that environment, but it's hard to see, you know, strong rallies in farm income, at least in the current outlook.
Right. And when you look at the supply side, we've got the ending stocks, which turn into beginning stocks, which are the supply side cushion for the new crop marketing year. They just seem to be snowballing on us here some, Ben. And I don't wish any will, any ill on anybody, but the best way to fix it is to have a crop problem, right?
Well, that's one way. Yeah, that's definitely the easiest way.
The quickest way.
Yeah, it's funny we both came to that conclusion at the same time. But, you know, it's the quickest way because, I mean, it just takes a while to build demand and to build demand challenges. But, we are seeing a little bit of shift in our, you know, kind of our – I don't want to call it demand, but we'd largely relied on the world to kind of take our excess supplies. Now we've got other places around the world that are supplying that and increasing their production, namely, you know, South America. And again, not talking illy of South American producers, but, you know, they are picking up some of that production potential that's feeding into the global marketplace and competing with us. And it was mentioned about Russia. That has been my biggest fear as I've gone around to crop producer meetings this winter. They always ask me, well, what's the biggest risk? And I said, frankly, it's Russia, one of the world's largest producers of wheat, deciding that they're going to sell wheat at whatever price it takes to move it. Yep. And we're in that environment right now. And that should concern everybody from the standpoint of how much, you know, soft red winter wheat we still have to move and to use. And now you've got one of the world's largest suppliers, depending on the year of winter wheat, you know, soft red winter wheat, dumping it on the market at whatever levels they can get. That's a concern, right? That's a downside risk that we have to be aware of right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's like Davis and I talked about in the news. It's not a question of if they will adjust the prices or the quotas or the taxes or the tariffs, whatever it is. they will make the adjustments necessary to be competitive in the export markets that they want to be competitive in. And, that makes it tough on that front. The other thing is, Ben, here we are with the Farm Bill hanging out over, you know, everything, trying to figure out exactly where that thing is going to go. And history shows us that Congress takes a snapshot of the current farm economic conditions and writes a bill to match up as best they can with those current economic conditions. Not a lot of forethought, not a lot of forward thinking. I don't even know if we're going to be able to get that done, Ben, in the environment that we're in, and to get a Title I, a commodity title, the Farm Safety Net, written in time to prevent what could be some real pain in the industry.
Yeah. So I would say that it is a little bit easier to move farm policy when you have a clear definition of what the underlying issue is, right? Like when the challenge or the crisis, whatever you want to call it, in the farming sector and across the countryside becomes more identifiable, it becomes easier to design policy, right? People kind of get more aligned in terms of, because they have a clear understanding of the issue, right? I'm not trying to say that you have to have a crisis to get a farm bill through. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, right, like it makes it a little bit easier. And I think the focus is starting to narrow. I think you're starting to recognize that people, I think you're starting to see that people are recognizing that the farm finance liquidity issue that is building is becoming more narrow, to where just having the liquidity or the current assets on the farm to be able to withstand, you know, these negative challenges or these negative financial hardships that could be coming down the line. I think that's now starting to become a little bit more narrow of a focus, and people are starting to identify that as something to help an area where farm policy can help with, right? Yeah. So again, I'm basically talking around the subject a little bit, but it becomes easier to design a bill when you have when everybody has a clear understanding of what the issue is. I think and so this liquidity challenge that we see coming is, I think, starting to define, you know, maybe what that issue. I will remind us, though, that, you know, there is some beauty in our current suite of safety net programs, and that, you know, at least for the agriculture risk coverage program, PLC to some sense, but at least for the agriculture risk coverage program, you know, it was designed with this period of going from high farm income to low farm income in mind. And so, you know, after we get through these initial couple of years, our county payments do start to become rather large as transition support, yeah, right? Like it's going to take a while because of the way, yep, the program's set up. We're kicking out some of those high revenue years now. They'll eventually keep coming into the formula, and it'll kick out more and more, you know, payments, right, basically on those ARC county programs. So,
right. Okay.
Because they've been next to none the last couple of years. High farm income, no farm payments. But there is a little bit of a lag in that, right? So it's going to take a year or two to get those worked, you know, basically more aligned.
Yep. Okay. We've been talking big picture, long range issues here, Ben. Let's bring it a little closer to where we're at in time. And we've got the prospective plantings report, the quarterly grain stocks report coming up at the end of the month. Focus on that acreage. The acreage intentions for me. What do you see happening there?
Well, this is one of the best days of the year in my life. It's always a fun day. It's usually a surprising day, and just, you know, it's a lot of fun, right? If you're interested in markets, it's a fun day. You know, so we're at 90. We're basically at 90 million acres of corn for our expectation. Wow. You know, private analysts are starting to come out. They're a little, you know, they're higher than that, which is kind of surprising the industry a little bit. That we could be talking about 92.5-93 million acres of corn. You know, we're at 91 is what our FAPRI estimate is for the year.
Okay.
And we think that that's reasonable. I mean, the economic returns for soybeans relative to corn are there to support reducing corn acreage. The flip side of that is it has been warm in February. February was a historically warm month, and talking with some of our fertilizer dealers here in the state of Missouri, they have all told me that February was the highest month of fertilizer demand that they have seen for any month of the year. I mean, we used a lot of fertilizer in May or in February. And that would signal, you know, maybe some more corn acres coming. And so there is this uncertainty, and that's what makes the end of the month, the planting intentions report in March so fun. I would just simply say that we've got two competing things. The profitability is not there for expanding corn, or, you know, keeping corn acreage at 93 million, 92 million acres of corn. You know, that would still be lower than where we were last year.
Yeah.
But profitability wise, that's too many corn acres. However, it's been warm. People like to plant corn. Fertilizer has gone on. That would signal, you know, that the corn acreage might be a little bit to the high side.
Gotcha. Ben, these are fun conversations, man. Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Yeah, have a good one, Chip. Thanks, Davis. You bet.
All right. That is Ben Brown, University of Missouri. Davis and I will be right back to wrap things up here on AgriTalk.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
In the morning, you're coffeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
In fact, we are here right now on AgriTalk, your pal Davis Michelson. So glad you've decided to join us today. Chip, I've switched from coffee to delicious flavored sparkling water. You ever drink this stuff in the cans?
Oh gosh, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's one of my favorite things.
Me too.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is a new thing. I feel like I just sort of really leaned into it, I don't know, starting a few months ago, maybe six months ago or so.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I like bubbly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's cheap.
Yep. Well, let me ask you this.
Okay.
Something came up on my Facebook while I was supposed to be paying attention to the show. Who would you rather have lunch with, Chip? It was a photograph. The photograph included three celebrities. I wonder who you would rather have lunch with. Are you ready for the three?
You bet.
The first one, Carrie Fisher. The second, Ringo Starr.
Ooh.
And the third, John Ritter. Who would you rather have lunch with?
Can I say?
Well, you're sure. Big Apple Joe, you're coming with Ringo, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's Ringo. Yeah, okay.
Right.
Being a drummer himself, he, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I am a Beatles fan. No question. Carrie, no.
No?
No.
No Princess Leia for you?
No.
Okay.
No. See, and the thing is, if I would bring my wife, the whole time, that would be, the whole conversation would be Star Wars then, and I'm not that much into it.
Okay. Fair enough.
Okay.
Fair enough.
So I enjoy a good lighthearted lunch.
Okay.
I think I'm going with Ritter.
John Ritter it is. I'm glad we got this ironed out.
Yeah.
I just happened to see a picture of the three of them hanging out together. Like,
that's
what
weird.
Unlikely trio.
Yeah. I'd take my wife though. That would give me somebody that I really wanted to talk to at lunch.
Is she listening today? Is that what this is?
It might
going
be.
On here?
That could be what's happening.
I'm going to put you down for Carrie Fisher. Hey, high cattle prices keep kind of coming up here. We touched on it a little bit yesterday with Rick Brock from the Brock Report, and then Ben Brown had some thoughts today as well. Yeah. I'd love to hear you talk cattle.
Yeah, you know, and what Ben said was you look at the different markets, and they're not all low-price markets. You got the cattle market, for example, that's very high priced. But when you look at the different segments of that cattle industry, the profitability, the spectrum of profitability is as wide as I've ever seen it.
Okay.
If you're raising calves and selling them off the cow, and they've got everything that they need when they go through that sale barn ring, holy smokes, you're making some money. The cow is making you some money with the calves. But up at Aberdeen earlier this week, Aberdeen, South Dakota, I heard I saw reports, and I believe they're correct, that the 7-weight black steers were at $3 plus. That's just so you know. I mean, if the steer's weighing 700 pounds at $3, that's $2,100.
Yeah.
A head. Not for three or four of them.
See?
That's a piece.
Yes. And the next layer is some guy loads those up and takes them home.
Right.
He's got to make a profit on those.
Yeah. So what's your cost to gain?
Right.
If you're out there buying corn right now, maybe that's a better deal than if you're a farmer feeder and raising the corn.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because if corn right now is under the cost of production, you'd rather be buying it than growing it and feeding it to these animals. But if you are a farmer feeder and your cost of production is $5 at 200 bushel or 220 bushel, you're do you really want to be walking the corn off the farm when it's that kind of a deal? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. All I know is that when you do the cattle crush right now and take that feeder cost against your feed cost and your cost to gain, whether it be 95, 93, 95 cents, whatever, it's awfully difficult to take the opportunities that are in the market right now and hedge a profit into that fat animal. It's crazy to say that when we're up here near all-time highs in the Fed cattle market, but that's the situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Ben Brown also steered us into a brief discussion of ARC and PLC, talking about how ARC was designed for market transitions like we're presently seeing.
That's
right. You agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. PLCs, no, because that's PLC is just your reference price and payments driven off of how the national average on-farm cash price relates to that reference price. Now, the ARC revenue coverage is based off of the Olympic average of the revenue that your farm has generated on a per-acre basis. So if you've got a couple of high revenue years in your Olympic average, yeah, it can turn into a significant payment. But an extended period of low prices where we're out there trying to rebuild demand or retake market share.
2 years, 5 years, 10 years?
The number's three.
Okay.
The number's three. That's when it really starts to hurt.
Okay.
Okay. So just some things to think about as we make plans for going forward. Speaking of making plans,
yes?
National Weather Service 6 to 10 day outlook for March 26th through the 30th. Below normal temperatures expected most of Wisconsin, the western half of Illinois, and parts west of that, near normal temperatures to above normal temperatures in the northeast part of the country. Near normal in the eastern Corn Belt. Above normal precipitation expected over most of the upper Midwest. Southern Iowa, Missouri, Kansas looking at near normal on the precip. Hey, thank you so much for listening today. We're going to get the latest on EPA's tailpipe emissions, at least the proposals from Jeff Cooper at the RFA tomorrow morning here on AgriTalk.